From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. Our Late Visitor by Marvin Kaye. Hearing an ascending tread upon the stairs leading to my workroom door, I peered out and saw Albert mounting the steps. I confess my first thoughts were completely selfish. How the devil did he find us out here in the middle of the woods? And then, since he is often garrulous, now I shall never finish writing my chapter tonight. But then my natural hospitality surfaced, and my conscience smote me fiercely for wishing away my closest friend. I resolutely set aside my petty problems, for after all, I recollected, what were they compared to his, considering that he had died the previous week? Of course, Jan and I only had the news second-hand, and we never put much faith in the Times. According to the obituary, rites were held in Albert's ancestral New England home, while memorial ceremony was conducted in the city. But my own precarious health forbade me from attending it. As he crossed the threshold of my den, I greeted Albert heartily and complimented him on the ruddiness of his complexion. He really looked the picture of health, and this made me something doubt the reliability of the newspaper accounts of his dissolution. I settled him in my easy chair, put a bottle of Majorska on the table by his side, and heartily pumped his cold hand. Despite the inconvenience of his visit, it was well past midnight, I was really quite pleased to see him the more I thought of it. For several days my spirits had been at their lowest ebb, and Albert's infectious joie de vivre seemed the fittest prescription for exorcising my sedia. For several minutes we exchanged hearty banalities. Naturally, I was curious to learn the details of his interment, but I shrank from broaching the subject. I could not be sure whether it was proper etiquette to discuss so personal a topic, and besides, it was far too lugubrious when gaiety was what I craved. We had scarce emptied the fifth when a sharp rap from the floor beneath quelled our festivities. Albert's voice is a big one that makes walls quake and furniture tremble. I feared its deep timber had penetrated to the nursery below. Excusing myself, I descended the stairs and found Jan in our child's room, singing her back to the sleep. "You woke her," she accused me, and I sheepishly explained that Albert had paid an unexpected call. "How dare he?" she demanded. "He's supposed to be dead." "Hush, he'll hear you." "I don't care if he does. What right has he to intrude at this time of night and disturb the entire house? Is he dead or not?" "Please," I implored, trying to quell her ire with a gesture. "What does it matter? After all, he is our friend." "He's your friend, not mine," Jan objected. "If he is not dead, it's too late for a social visit. And if he is, then he certainly has no business here. Hasn't he any sense of propriety?" I did what I could to calm her, but to no avail. Her tenacity resembles nothing so much as a decapitated Gila monster whose severed head still clings to the victim it has bitten. She positively insisted that I return to the attic and determine the precise state of Albert's health. I was reluctant to insult my guest and told her so, but Jan would not be gainsaid. "And while you're talking to him," she added, "see that he keeps quiet and doesn't wake Elenia again. I had to sing her back to sleep, and you know how I hate music." But isn't her musical turtle working? I asked. No, it's broken. And it's not a turtle, as you know very well. It's a beetle, no matter what you tell Ilania. The turtle was a long-standing toy of contention between Jan and me. It was, of course, a stuffed beetle with a music box inside. But I detest crawly things, so I divested it of a few of its cloth legs and christened it Turtle, with which nomenclature our daughter heartily concurred. What harm is it, I repeatedly asked, if Ilania thinks of it as a turtle? Because, Jan insisted, it is a beetle. A beetle is a beetle, and a turtle is a turtle. I've often tried to reason with my wife. I've said again and again that if we think something is so, then it is, and have referred to her Pirandello for confirmation of my arguments. But Jan's frame of reality is unshakably objective, and no internalization upon the mystery of things touches her. I am, she would have it, therefore I think. I returned to the attic and found Albert puffing on his clay pipe. A second fifth of vodka, half depleted, was at his elbow, and a merry smile played upon his thick lips. And now, he proclaimed, as soon as I had shut the door, I do believe it is time for a song. In vain, I tried to suppress his urge to carol forth, but I might as soon have harnessed the whirlwind. He has a well-trained voice. Once he carried spears at the Met, but in his mature days had graduated to the enviable role of torturer in Samson and Delilah, and frequently had the privilege of burning out the strong man's eyes. Thus my friend was amply qualified to break into the refrain if the calunnia at 3 o'clock in the morning. My half-hearted protest forgotten, I sat at my work table and listened entranced. He had scarce gotten halfway through the coda when a loud double rap at the door of my den stopped him smack upon the final repetition of the word flagello. I had no opportunity to bid the knocker enter. Before the words could clear the roof of my mouth, the door slammed wide open, and Jan strode in, fury in her eyes. Albert rose and respectfully bowed to her. Then he drank her health and swallowed the rest of the vodka in his glass. "I asked you to quiet him down," she barked at me, then rounded on my friend. "And you! What right have you to be here at this time of morning? Don't you know this is the only chance my husband has to work undisturbed?" "I beg your pardon," Albert murmured, taking her hand in his and pressing her fingers to his lips. "But I so wish to see you all once more, and there simply was no opportunity to consider the niceties of timing." She snatched back her hand, scarcely mollified. "That's the way you always were, Albert," she accused. "My husband's welfare never concerned you. It's always been your convenience that has determined the scope of friendship." "Jan," I pleaded, "you're insulting our guest." "I don't care. It's true. You're only an article of furniture to him. Whenever he wants to relax, he puts his feet up on you." The situation was clearly impossible, and I turned to Albert with a shrug. My lips were sealed, but he knew what my pantomime meant right enough. We know what women are. "Well, well," said Albert, walking to the door. "It is clear to me I have not timed my visit as conveniently as I might have. And so, I will say good night." He bowed and turned to depart, but Jan, crossing her arms, fixed him with a stare. "Not so fast, Albert," she snapped. "You are not leaving until you answer one question." "Janice," I begged, "Albert has come such a long way to visit us. Is it necessary to be so rude as—" But I got no further. She turned her baleful gaze upon me, and my heart sank in a morass of cowardice. "Well?" she asked in a threatening voice, glowering at me. Her foot tapped impatiently. "Will you ask him, or shall I?" I forestalled her, with a resigned gesture, and turned to Albert. His pudgy face wore his customary good-humored grin, and he spread his hands apart in a gesture of amused bewilderment. "What can you possibly ask," he inquired, "that would offend me? Despite what this good woman says, you are my dearest friend, and I willingly open the secrets of my heart to your inspection. Speak, demand, I'll answer." His words cheered me. After all, what wrong could my curiosity commit? It was neither a subject of embarrassment nor shame. I cleared my throat and resolved to hesitate no longer. "Albert, mon vieux," I said, smiling to prove that the matter was really of trifling consequence. "The fact is that Janice and I read some disturbing news in last Tuesday's Times." I paused, expecting him to catch my meaning, but he merely stared at me with a blank expression on his face. "I am at a complete loss," he said at last. "Discover to what you allude. I do not recall any distressing articles in last week's papers, but perhaps you were not aware that I subscribed to the Post." "Well, then you see," I replied, flustered, "the Times, you know, that is." The fact is, the words stuck in my throat, but Jan, grown weary of my dilatory approach, blurted out what I had tried to gently insinuate. "The newspaper," she told Albert, "positively stated you were dead." He stared at her, amazed. Then he looked at me, and I cannot adequately describe the anguish expression that filled his eyes. Sorrow was a principal emotion, and pain, too. Yet there was something worse, a keen disappointment that exceeded the normal bounds of that mundane humor. All of Albert's inextinguishable zest for life had been suddenly, impossibly, but irrevocably quelled. "I wish," he moaned in a daunted, mournful voice, such as I have never heard him use before, "I wish most mightily that you had never told me." And even as he spoke, the arch of his balding scalp caved inwards, and his round skull turned into a hollow concavity. The lights within his eyes guttered and died, and the smile upon his lips flickered like a death's head grin before the labia sucked in and disappeared. His arms and legs and trunk deflated, collapsed, as they had been filled with jello, subjected to a bath of scalding water. Where my friend had stood, there was nothing but a damp stain which oozed out of one of my daughter's oldest, most cruelly ravaged rag dolls that lay crumpled on the floor, its face half obliterated by the devouring tooth of time, soaked up the spreading liquid that poured from its body. I knelt beside the pool, and upon tasting it, identified it as Majorska Dwarska. "For once," said Janice, she stripped off her nightdress and clambered into bed an hour later. "It appears as if the Times got its facts straight." "Yes," I murmured sullenly. "But why did we have to bring it to his attention?" "After all," she said, lightly caressing my cheek with her fingertips, "he had to be told sooner or later. Would you rather he heard it from a stranger instead of from his closest friends?" I tried to argue about the necessity of telling him at all, but I could not make her see my point. Besides, her hands were busy beneath the covers, and soon I found myself preoccupied with other, more immediate concerns. But before Janice permitted me to finish the business at hand, I had to promise her to tell Elania that her turtle was really a beetle.